Good morning, good day, and good evening. Welcome to episode, I want to say 170 of Tech of a Tea, probably. Anyway, today's guest is the Linux Tube. How's it going? Welcome to the show.
Why, thanks for having me on. And it is going quite well today. I didn't have too an awful of a day at work, and I got home and I get to hang out with you, brother.
Yeah, I woke up about an hour ago, so hopefully, you know, everything goes well, my mind actually works. I was saying before we started recording, that I do feel a bit of a cold coming on, so let's hope that doesn't become a problem. We'll see. Yeah. When I had COVID, I took that entire week off. I did not record any videos.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can. I mean, COVID was no joke. When I caught it, well, I've actually had it 6 times.
Mm.
Because during the whole height of the pandemic, I was also, you know, going to shows and performing and stuff like that. So even though we were wearing masks and staying at a distance, I still got exposed somehow. So, but during the course of it all, it has damaged part of my lungs. Mm. So, you know, so it's I got this nasty little cough that happens from time to time. Sometimes you see me trying to hide it in the video and stuff like that. But yeah, no, yeah, when I had it, I think the last time I had it was probably about maybe 8 months ago, nine months ago, and I was off for a week too.
I think the the one thing I did that I shouldn't have been doing, though, I am really stubborn when it comes to getting my stuff done. I have a schedule. I'm going to work to the schedule. I don't care about anything else. I still planned out a week of videos, like, on the first day. And I was, like, losing it. I couldn't focus on anything. Somehow managed to make it happen. I don't know how. Those videos made no sense. I had to, like, when I do my videos, I, like, jot out the, like, points I want to hit. I had to reorder half my notes when I went to record them, because this is just nonsense and made no sense.
Well, that's half my videos anyhow, so I guess I must still have COVID.
when you do videos, do you, like, plan anything out, or you just wing it as you go?
So no, you know what? Here's the thing. I do plan out in my head. I get things. I do write some bullet points, but I almost always forget to look at the bullet points. And because of my history of performing and stuff, I usually do mine, and I know it's weird, but I usually do all my stuff in one shot.
Right.
One take. Very, very little stops and starts. You know, it's really weird, but I do plan out to a degree, and I want to get a whiteboard. I noticed your little whiteboard where you always write, you know, little things on it right there off to your side.
Yeah,
exactly. And I want to get a whiteboard like that so I can put my bullet points up to where I can see them instead of on like an old bill or something like that that I can use, or like an old piece of paper or something that I use sitting around, you know, write little bullet points. And I got to go like this. What am I doing? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I do. It's a mix. You know, it's a mix.
I didn't buy that whiteboard for like the videos or anything. I've had that for years. I used to use it. I found it useful when I was doing a remote dev job. Like, just jot out everything I have to do on the board, so I know that I just, like, what I can, like, knock it off as I go. I know there's, like, you know, digital tools for that, but, like, you know, when something's on a separate tab or a separate screen, I'm gonna find myself not looking at it. With this, like, I would have it right outside the corner of my vision, be like, okay, this is exactly what I need to do.
I am too ADHD to do separate tabs and that kind of stuff, because what will happen is something in between will catch my eye, and then I'll go down that rabbit hole.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep.
You know, like last night in my Discord server, I'm trying to build a web page, right? Mm. And so I posted in my Discord, hey, can somebody give me a good idea on any good tools out there to build web pages, right? Website. And so somebody, I think it was HipDad, he sent me a link or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in between clicking on that link and opening up the web browser and going to look for that, somehow I saw something else that took my eyeballs away. And then like 3 hours later, I'm like, oh yeah, I was supposed to be trying to figure out how to build a website.
Yeah, this is what happens whenever I like reference a tweet in one of my videos. Like, I'll go check the tweet. I'm like, oh, whoop, here's the thing over here. What's this? Oh, what's this thing that's trending? Oh, it's grabbed my attention. Don't do the video for like 20-30 minutes.
And what's really wild is the one that, Twitter's, I'm bad on that too, mm-hmm. because what's really getting me is one is Elon Musk's tweets. I follow his tweets. He's comedic as hell in some of his tweets. He's funny. And then also Serpent OS is posting a lot of stuff. And so, like, I'm you know, I read all the stuff that they're doing and stuff like that. And so I get lost in that one too when I'm trying to research other stuff too. So I'm bad. I'm ADHD. I've
heard of Serpent OS. What's that one?
Serpent OS is the original developer of Solus.
Oh, okay.
And when he left Solus, he decided to go and create Serpent OS.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not released yet. It hasn't come out yet. It's been in the works for months. Mm-hmm. But I'm following him because what he initially started with Solus was so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just crap that the, you know, that the package management fell through, you know what I'm saying? But what he started with actually at the time was very amazing.
Mm-hmm,
so I'm expecting to kind of, it's either going to be a huge expectation met or a huge letdown, one of the two, you know, with whatever happens with Serpent OS.
Mm-hmm. So they do, because
if he renovates another distro, that'd be pretty cool.
So are they doing their own separate packaging system as well, or what are they doing?
I see, that's the thing I don't know. He hasn't mentioned that yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. He hasn't mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that was the weak point of not the packaging system, but the repository, the amount of packages they had in the repository. That was the weak point of Solid. So hopefully he learned from that.
Mm.
And he had to take some time off from Serpent because he had to go back and help Solus get back up and running again. Yeah. You heard what happened with them, right?
Yeah, that was a mess. I'd not been like following what was going on like behind the scenes prior to everything blowing up. But man, going back and looking at it like that, there were a lot of signs of things going wrong for a long time. Like packages slowing down updates, servers not getting updated, servers going down. Yeah, we're trying to like migrate, but like how long does it actually take to migrate your servers? It's not like a 6-month process.
Yeah, well, so recently one of the devs made mention that they didn't have, the only one person had actual access to the server.
There was one person with physical access at the university.
With physical access, and he had to do all the migration, so it was dependent on this guy being available.
Who
apparently he's got like a complex job that he's busy all the time on. Mm. So that's what was creating that bottleneck.
Mm.
But part of the restructure that they just got done doing was they got more people access to a different server. They moved completely. So
right.
So hopefully that's helping Solus grow even more.
Yeah, I don't use Solus myself. I've not had like experience using it, but I don't want these like, you know, even though it does have these packaging issues, I don't want these distros that are doing their own independent thing to go away. Like,
but wait, exactly.
Like, it's great that Debian's a thing and there's so much maintenance there. It's great that like Arch's a thing. It's great that all of these even though Arch is a lot smaller than Debian, it's still like well maintained. Mm-hmm. It's great that all these things exist, but it's also neat to see someone trying to do their own thing and just
their own
make it work somehow.
Yeah, I agree because how do I put it? That's the innovation of Linux.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you can cookie cutter. And I'm not knocking guys who make a fork of distro, okay?
Yeah.
There's a lot of work involved in that as well. You know what I'm saying?
People are taking one of the posts I said way out of context a while back. I said if your distro could be achieved... Wait, what was it? You don't need a distro fork if your distro could be achieved with an installation script. Yeah, that's what it was. Something like that.
That's and, awesome.
Like, Tech Hut referenced it in a video, and like people took it like as a serious thing, and I'm just posting something dumb on Twitter.
That's awesome. That's freaking awesome. But no, it's true. Yeah, I mean, I'm not dissing those guys in any way, shape, or form if they do a cookie cutter distro or, you know, something like that. An independent distro is actual innovation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is what to me what Linux has the greatest capability of doing. You could take it anywhere. You know, you could build off of a base kernel and make what you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It takes a lot of team effort. It takes a lot of brain power. It takes a lot of time, but it can be done. And those guys that are doing it, like Solace, are is just, you know, even though they're struggling, you know, that's part of the struggle. You know, they're not relying on somebody else's hard work, you know, just to bundle it together and make it happen. You know what I mean? They're literally creating it from the ground up. And for them to be slower and more methodical, to me, makes sense and is the best for it. Take your time, get that finished product out there. Stop trying to meet a deadline and just get it good. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think that is one of the biggest issues with Linux. Is because you have so many people that are rushing to get out there. They want to be the next latest and greatest thing. That a lot of things are getting overlooked, you know what I mean? And they're putting quantity, so to speak, before quality.
Yep. No, I've talked about this a lot with, there's a lot of FOSS projects that like working on these big, shiny new features. And Hyperland was a great example of this. Hyperland early on was an Vax will agree with me here. Hyperland was an unstable mess. But it had a lot of these really cool features that didn't really exist as like a bundle on any other Wayland compositors. It had rounded corners. It had transparency, blur. It had animations, like all of
animation,
this stuff.
Animation, yeah.
But if you ran it, it was going to crash within the next 20 minutes. Like it was a mess to use, but it looked really cool. Nowadays, Vaxry spent a lot of time working on like ironing out those like those boring things, ironing out those crashes, ironing out those weird edge cases, getting things working like they should be working. And nowadays you have something really good. I can understand why it's cool to work on like really exciting things, but a lot of projects tend to ignore that fundamental base that is way more important. No one's going to care about your software if it doesn't, like, if it's not stable. It doesn't matter how much cool stuff it does. It's not going to be able to achieve those tasks in a real-world situation.
The minute the average Linux user, whether they're new to Linux user or even vets are probably even worse than new to Linux user, because the new to Linux user probably be like, oh, it's my fault. I messed it up. You know what I'm saying? Somewhere, somehow. Because they don't really know. But anyhow, they will have that bug happen, and literally, if it's not just right and it, you know, happens instantly or whatever, you can bet they're fucking wiping, they're nuking and paving, and they're on to the next distro. You know, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. You know, those little bug fixes, those things can actually create a negative taste towards people's, you know, desires towards Linux, you know, more so, less, like I said, and more the seasoned vets that know what's going on, because they're like, oh, this is garbage. And then it gets labeled garbage. The next thing you know, nobody wants to deal with it. You know what I'm saying? And it's very lucky that Wayland didn't have that. And Hyperland, you know, has come a long way, you know, with Baxter's done so much work with that. It's amazing. He should be on the Wayland team with all the stuff that he's actually fixed and caught. From what I understand, I don't know why they're not paying him. You know what I'm saying?
I know there are some people in there that don't particularly like him, but that's a whole separate thing. Like, he's done a lot of like really good work getting Hyperland like actually solid and actually good. Like, right now, I would say, I know some of the River people are going to disagree because they really like River, but I think right now Hyperland is probably the best WL Roots Wayland experience. Probably. I can't think of anything else I would use in place of it.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was going to try it, and then I never got a chance to try it yet, right. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. But everything that I've heard has been outstanding. You know, I mean, from what I've seen too. I mean, I gotta tell you, man, I remember back in the old days. I don't know how long you've been using Linux, but I've been using it for a long time. And I remember back in the old days when we used to use Compiz to get animations, you know, with the magic lamp and all that kind of stuff, and the wobbly windows and that stuff that's in KWin before KWin did all that stuff, right? And honestly, I gotta tell you, that's the thing that excites me the most about Hyperland are those animations that he has. you know, and the potential of what it's going to go to, hopefully, you know. I mean, it's in its infancy, or I mean, at best. So to watch it progress and grow, once it gets figured out, I'm really excited. I'm rooting for this cat, you know, with what he's going to do, because those were the coolest days. When I remember when people would come over to my house and I would do the desktop cube. I'd just be sitting there with my keys doing the arrows and doing the cube and just spinning it around. People were like, "Whoa, what is that?" And I'm like, "That's Linux. Windows can't do that." You know what I'm saying?
Like, I get that.
The best you could do back then was Windows decorations. You know what I'm saying?
Well, back then, I don't know what it was called, but there was this app you could run.
Like that.
There was this app you could run that would have like termites crawl around your screen, and you could like smack them with a hammer or something. I don't remember what it was called.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of that app too. Yeah, that
was like back on XP or something.
Screensaver game.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and then I remember with the floating cow when that first came out.
Floating cow.
The jumping cow for the screensaver. People were tripping out on that.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah. X Screensaver. Mm. Is that the name of the app?
Yeah.
It actually has it in it. It does have it in it.
Ah.
It's got the bouncing cow.
Actually, I just remembered something about X Screensaver.
What they should have done is they should have made it Larry the cow from Gentoo.
Mm-hmm. So I went and looked back at some early stuff about Ubuntu, because Ubuntu's done some like weird things throughout their history. This is going to tie back into X Screensaver. Back in Warty Warthog, there were. So Mark Shuttleworth had a brilliant idea. It was really dumb. So Mark Shuttleworth was like, "Hey, so let's include this like tasteful nudity picture as like, I think it was going to be the login screen. There was going to be one for the calendar, and the calendar one was going to like change every month."
Right.
It got a lot of community back. Like, this was before Warty Warthog came out. This was during, like, the RCs. When it was added, people were like, why is this here? Because there was also a bug at the time where if you were upgrading from, like, the previous RC to the new one and you hadn't set a custom wallpaper, which, you know, most people using Ubuntu at that time would be upgrading because, you know, you're using the RC before it officially released. Anyone there at that point is, like, very dedicated to what Ubuntu is going to become as a project.
Right.
So if you didn't have a wallpaper set, it set the calendar picture as the wallpaper. Then a lot of people suddenly saw it.
So some person's teenagers logging onto the desktop and are seeing this new...
Yeah. And then the mailing list was just full of comments about this, but... When there was a discussion about removal, which eventually did happen because it wasn't there with, you know, when Warty Warthog came out, otherwise everybody would remember that.
Official release, yeah.
There was also brought up some stuff about X Screensaver. Now, X Screensaver at the time, I'll find this one because other distros talked about it as well. X Screensaver. Here we go. I'll send it to you because it's hilarious. This is the one from the Fedora mailing list or Fedora forums. But it was reported on Gentoo and reported on, it was reported on a bunch of others as well. Does this one mention it? Ah, here it is. Much to my surprise, I stumbled across it drawing an erect penis. At the time, there was an option in X Screensaver called penis and flaccid penis and erect penis. And it would just draw one on your screen as a screensaver.
That is awesome.
It was, and the best part about it is it was added without any mention in the change log, so it was just suddenly there. So if you had if you just had X Screensaver like set on random, it would just come up at some point.
Oh, that's awesome.
When that happened, a bunch of distros were like, wait, why is this here? And then everyone just patched it out themselves. I think it was eventually then removed from X Screensaver itself because every other distro removed it anyway. But like,
right.
There are so many weird things like that back in the early history of Linux.
The early days of Linux, oh my God, I don't even know how to put it.
I wasn't there at that point.
Landfill.
I started using Linux like 3 or 4 years ago. So I've just sort of gone back and looked at things in a historical manner where I can see how everything's played out. But how long have you been using Linux?
So I've been using Linux. So I can't tell you the exact year or date, but I know it's over 22 years. I remember when Ubuntu came out.
Yeah, so yeah, you would have been before Ubuntu and Fedora.
Yeah, exactly. And so the way it happened for me was I was using Windows 95 or 98. Can't remember which one. Mm-hmm. And I BSOD'd for like the 100th time. I was running a business.
Uh-huh.
And I got so pissed off. I grabbed the box and I was taking it to the computer shop. And I literally had just gotten it out like a week ago. Right. And I'm taking it to the computer shop and I walk in and I was at that computer shop so frequently with my business computers that they knew me by first name. Like, hey, Alex, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? That's how frequent I was there. Right. Mm-hmm. So I walk in and the actual owner's son was there and he was sitting on a corner of a, like a counter or something like that. Uh-huh. And he had Linux open. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And he says, oh, this is Linux. I'm like, wow. He says, yeah, you guys are fighting that whole Windows thing. And I'm over here just cruising around, surfing the net and this, that, and other. I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm like, all right, well, let me try that. And so he put it on my box. And it was beyond, I mean, at that time, I was not super, I'm self-taught in everything. I've not had one class of anything. You know what I'm saying? So at that time, it was super techie, and it was a frustration, you know, like none other.
Do you remember what the distro was at that point?
The distro was...
There's not that many options at that point. So
It was RHEL. It was Red Hat Enterprise.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah.
It was Red Hat Enterprise, but I can't remember the actual version, whether it was like 1, 2, 12, or whatever. But at any instance, it was Red Hat, and it was very, very, very... techie, because at that time everything, I mean, there was no, literally I think there was only like 3 or 4 different, you know, applications on there or programs on there that actually had a GUI. Everything was all TUI and command line, you know what I mean? So you had to learn how to kind of do that in command line, right? I mean, and at best I think you couldn't even get sound cards to really work with it, you know what I mean? It was really trippy. So that was my introduction to Linux. I got thrown into the deep end right from like the high dive platform, not the regular, you know, diving board. I'm talking like the high dive platform. And so that's the way it worked. And I just watched it evolve. I remember the biggest thing when Fedora came out, the biggest thing was there were GUIs. And some sound cards would actually work. And graphics card. There was a time, there used to be a time, pretty much, so now you can go out and buy almost any type of piece of hardware,
pretty much,
throw it in a box, and it'll work with Linux, right?
There was some weird esoteric stuff that doesn't work exactly like, you know, Stream Deck and things like that, but like, yeah, general hardware stuff, absolutely.
Yeah, general hardware, yeah. There was a time where even general hardware, you literally had to create a shopping list based on what was known to have worked with Linux. That's how long I've been using Linux. You know, from the old days.
So looking at Red Hat at the time, it could have either been Enterprise Linux or Red Hat Linux, because Red Hat Linux still existed at the time.
No, it was Red Hat Linux. I remember that.
Oh, it was Red Hat Linux, not Enterprise. Okay.
Yeah, but I just don't know what version they were, you know, iteration they were on.
It was definitely near the end of the life of Red Hat Linux, so it would have been Red Hat Linux. If you were given a recent version, it would have been 7.
Okay, I think that might have been. I think that's about right. I think that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah, 7.0.9 or something around that was new at the time.
Yeah, somewhere in that. Yeah, it was 7. Or 7.2, I think that's right. Like that, 7 is right.
Because
I mean, it was amazing. And that was the one thing. And that's what I can say is this, honestly, looking back, accreditation to Canonical, they innovated and created a future single-handedly for Linux.
Yep.
Because back then the guys at Red Hat and they just didn't, you know, all those guys that were doing the stuff, they didn't have any inclination to make it easy, you know what I'm saying, or user friendly.
Fedora was,
if you
knew
how to use it, great. If you didn't, they didn't care. Canonical took a different approach. They were like, yeah, no, we want to make this available for the world to use, you know. And I think they literally are, you know, put Linux on the map, so to speak.
Yeah, looking
as
at
a common user.
Looking at it now, Fedora was a year before Ubuntu came out.
Yeah, a year before Ubuntu, so they, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if... obviously, Mark would have had the plan for a while, but seeing Fedora come out and then a year later doing Ubuntu, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of what Ubuntu decided to do when they first released was inspired by what Fedora wasn't doing.
Oh, yes, most definitely. You know, I mean, most definitely there was. They came out, I think it was GNOME. They're the ones that innovated with GNOME, I think. And I think Fedora had KDE back then.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I can't remember. I can't remember what their desktop environment was.
It might
I've always remembered. I always remembered it as KDE for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. But in any instance, they were competing as the two giants, behemoths, that were always at the battle. They still are, you know. But they were competing, but they were both going along the same lines. But I think Canonical just paid more attention to the finite details in the beginning.
Canonical wasn't as hard on, like, free software. They like, wanted to make things actually work.
Right, exactly. And so I think, like I said, single-handedly to me, I think they're the main reason why Linux is even on the map right now.
Well, yeah, no, it makes sense, because for a lot of people, Linux is Ubuntu. Like, that's when they hear the word Linux, like they
synonymize it, absolutely. They do. They synonymize it as Linux is Ubuntu. And in fact, it's still why people still recommend it to new Linux users, because they've been saying it for how many decades now? Oh, it's Ubuntu, you know. Hey, I remember Ubuntu. I remember they used to flood that you could request. And I remember, you know, how I got my first distribution of Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
I emailed them to send me a disk, and they actually used to mail you a disk for free.
Yeah, they had the ship it disks.
Yep, they had the ship it disks, and it was all for free.
Okay, here's the pic. Here's one of the pictures that they actually used. This was going to be the login screen picture. That is taking a long time to send.
Oh, I see it.
That was going to be the login screen picture.
I remember that.
Yeah, they only used that one for the ship it art instead.
Yeah, and that was because I remember. Oh, wow, you just took me back, man. That was instantly like. Reminisce. I remember when that came out, because their biggest claim was they were trying to unify the world.
Yeah, the Circle of Friends.
Yep, the Circle of Friends. They were trying to unify the world all through Linux, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Linux started out to be. And look what it's turned into now. I mean, we've got all of us hanging out in different servers. We're out here creating content. We're collaborating and doing things, you know. That's the one thing that the Linux community has always been good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also all tend to agree to disagree on a lot of
infighting about things that don't really matter, or things that have already been decided.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, in the end, your workflow is your workflow, and my workflow is my workflow. As long as it works for me, who cares, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not every, and that's like, I look back and, you know, people say, why would you recommend Ubuntu with snaps to anybody, and this, that, and another? And I'm like, you know, some people really don't care how long an application takes to open up. I know it may bug you, but some people don't. They just don't. They're like, okay, you know? Mm. I mean, it's hard to fathom that, you know? But it's true.
I think people forget to contextualize things around... They contextualize things around Linux, not around operating systems. If you compare what Ubuntu is doing to Windows 11, like... I think I know what a lot of people... like. I've been seeing a lot of people getting, like, really annoyed at what Windows 11 is doing. Like, if you're annoyed, try out Ubuntu. Try out Linux in some form. Just see how it goes. Like, this is... I think a lot of people out there with, like, who haven't used Linux have these... still have these, like, very old, outdated information about what Linux is nowadays. Like, people still think it's what it's at, like, 5-10 years ago, where, you know, it legitimately was a bit of a problem. Like, just gaming, for example. A lot of people still think Proton is this thing where, you know, a lot of games aren't gonna work, it's gonna be really flaky, and yeah, there are some games that are like that, but most things just work. And the funny thing is, some games work better on Proton than do on Windows, because some of them are made for, like, Windows 7, Windows XP, and that's what Wine's really good at dealing with. Wine can play those games with no problem.
No problem at all. And it's so funny because that's what... So, at my work, I work with a lot of millennials and whatever the next generation is after them.
Gen Z.
Z or whatever, right. And so I work with them, and it's really funny because at lunch, you know, or whatever, they'll come up to me and be like, "Hey, man, so you're the Linux YouTuber cat, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "All right." So, because I even got people on third shift coming to me. And they're like, "You're the Linux YouTuber cat." I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Man, I've been having a problem with this game and this, that, and another, man. How does Linux do with that?" You know, because the Steam Deck has really kicked open a lot of doors. And so they're like, they're all, it's funny because they're all synonymizing Steam with Linux now. You know what I mean? And so, like, they're, you know, they're gamer and that's big in the world, so they'll come to me and they'll ask me, "How's that work?" I'm like, "It works flawlessly," or "It doesn't work flawlessly," or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Or, "You got to use this version of Proton. What's that?" And I tell them it's compatibility layer and all this stuff. And so, like, it's really their eyes are opening wide as to a lot of the games that they're actually being able to play on Linux. And, like, actually, Linux, your gaming on Linux is not a lost cause anymore, not like it used to be. And so I think that is actually helping Linux as well, and more people are starting to consider it. But there's still those misconceptions that people have about Linux, like you were talking about earlier, whether it's they've read somewhere or they tried it years ago when it wasn't good, and it's like now it's automatically, you know, like the Bible, that's what it is. You know what I'm saying? And it's really not. You know, but that, you know, I've converted to Linux, I'd say over at my workplace, I would say seven people.
Oh, wow. That's usually pretty good.
Seven people. And I recently put Zero Linux on a Legion laptop for one of my bosses. And I said, "You are going to do something with this laptop, because this laptop is, you know, 100% bad to the bone." And he's like, "I'm just going to cruise around on the internet with it." I'm like, "I want this thing, then." Are you kidding me? I'm like, no. I said, "At least, you know," and I threw some games. I said, "Play some of these games right here." You know what I'm saying? Like, do something.
I love it when people get these, like, crazy machines, and it's just a browser box. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's your money. Spend it how you want to, but, like, come on.
You have no idea what you've gotten, you know, going here. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but in the end, you know, and what was interesting is he hated Windows. And he's not a computer guy. And he comes up to me 2 weeks later and he says, "You know, that Linux is awesome." And I'm like, "Okay." He says, "I've never had an operating system where I could literally turn it on, click where I needed to go, and I went there and didn't have to do like 12 other clicks to get to something." He says, I could find stuff right away. He says, I never once felt like throwing this laptop across the room. Whereas with Windows, every 2 minutes, I wanted to throw the damn thing or punch the screen.
Yeah, you know, Windows updates, they're fun. I love it when Windows updates happen when you gotta actually do something. Hey, you wanna delay your update? No. Go away. You update now.
Yep. Or you'll be in the middle of doing something and all of a sudden, somehow, it just decides to start updating and you can't stop it and it's rebooting and you lost everything you just did. Not good, man. I hate that. Like I said, I fell in love with Linux and it was a steep learning curve all those years ago.
I can imagine it was definitely a mess doing it back on Red Hat Linux.
So then there was a time, I can't remember what it's called. I think the NDIS wrapper or something like that for drivers, like for video cards and stuff. You actually had to go down and like almost repackage your own drivers and make a wrapper for it or something like that in order to get it to work.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not kidding, man. It was was bad.
I am very happy with the way that AMD is nowadays, where, you know, oh, my camera is out of focus. Give me a second.
You look good to me.
No, this other camera. What are you do? There we go. Turn that. Back. And we're going to come back. Okay, now we're good. It keeps focusing. I've got my, you've seen my videos that I have my, the monitor in the frame. Sometimes it decides that it wants to focus on that.
I should
turn my autofocus off.
I gotta tell you something, man. I really enjoy your videos, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I do. You know, and your level of knowledge is fucking amazing, dude. You know, I mean, it seriously is. I'm amazed at some of the stuff you come up with. I'm like, holy crap.
This comes from reading lots of mailing lists and lots of this information is not coming from the ether. It's all out there. I'm just spending the time going and actually finding it.
No, you know, I'm very impressed with you. You're one of my favorite YouTubers, you and DT.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I love Matt. You know, I love Matt for what he does, but more so, I love the comedic value from Matt and all the mistakes he makes is funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like my videos to be... One thing I've had to work on over the years is trying to streamline them, cutting out the bullshit and just focusing on, like, the main things. Because my old videos... A lot of them, I tend to, like, repeat the same thing, jump back and forth between topics in ways that don't really make sense. I like what I'm doing to sort of flow in a sensible way. This is how I talk normally. For anyone who hasn't, like, just heard me talking off the cuffs, I have no idea what I'm saying half the time. It's just rambling nonsense. I have to be very particular about how I put my videos together, otherwise they will make absolutely no sense.
Your mind is like mine then, because you'll have one intent thought and then all of a sudden another thought will come by and it'll be like that comes out of your mouth because it's also as pertinent as the first thought and you want to get them both out.
Yeah.
So I understand exactly what you're saying. I've done that so many times.
Yeah, when I'm playing like a game on stream, for example, like I'm talking about something, having a serious conversation, then at the corner of my eye, I see a chest. Like, oh, chest. Let's go see that.
Yeah. So, like, I get, like, in some of the, because I do, like Matt said, I do a lot of distro reviews because I'm doing it for a lot of the Noodle Linux users. And really what it is they're constantly, people just ask me to do them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I've gotten into that.
I was going to ask you, like, why you do so many distro reviews. Like, what will you actually get out of it? Like, what the point of them are?
So I do it to present Linux in a positive way to a lot of people. To make, not, like, once again, going back to that, this distro doesn't work for you, but it works for me. You know what I'm saying? And so I want to present as many distros as I can in a positive way for people. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why I do that, and also it's been lately, it's in the ones that I do, if you notice, a lot of the ones I do are not the common ones. They're not like the Ubuntu's, the Zubuntu's. It's like ones you've never heard of, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or independent ones, that kind of stuff. I want to bring
those
guys. I
did see you had Nabara in there. That's probably like the, and obviously Ubuntu, but like, Nabara was probably like the most well-known one out of most of these I can see here.
Yeah. Yeah, so Nabara was one of my first ones that I did because it first came on. It was when GE actually made it, created it. That's when I did it. So it was still new and at the time.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
even really known. But, it, you know, because of the gaming aspect of it and how it just exploded, you know. And so I do those for that, and it's to help developers get their stuff out there and build up the community and let, you know, new to Linux users do that, you know, get their choice, you know. But I like doing other things. In fact, I'm actually trying to do another totally different off topic from Linux type channel as well. And so, but that's why, and lately it's gotten to be where the thing is everybody finds these out of the way ones and they send them to me to review because they want to see what my review is going to be like. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I get all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. That's where most of them come from. It's not me going out and finding them. It's them sending it to me saying, do this. You know what I'm saying? So it's just what people have monikered me to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was another YouTuber that was doing it, but I don't know where that person was getting their information. Oh, I saw that eyebrow. where that person was getting their information from. In the sense of, what, you know, how, if they had subscribers sending it to him, uh-huh, or if he was just, you know, picking them out of the ether or whatever. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And he could seem to only pull the same straws every now and then. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to go down that route, you know, but at any instance, that's, you know, so for me, that's what it is. And then, of course, you get the guy, you know, like Ten Lee J, who gets in there and every video is like, this is not a Gentoo video. I don't think I can take this one. You know, this is not good content.
Oh, God. Yeah, I had him on the podcast. I think it would have been, wait, I had him on the podcast like last week or something. It's not gone up yet. But yeah. That was fun. I definitely enjoyed that. But yeah, his content's just like nonsense. It's just whatever comes to mind.
He's an awesome guy, but I'll tell you, some of the tangents he gets on, it's like, whoa. You know, whoa. he's a really awesome guy, man. Mm. Awesome guy. Knowledgeable. Holy cow. You know, I've been at it a lot longer than a lot of you guys, and you guys' knowledge is amazing. You know, it's just amazing. I don't know if it's because you guys grew up more techie than me and I had to fight for it more. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, back in my day, the earliest computer was a Commodore 64 and ColecoVision by Atom, or Atom by ColecoVision. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm blessed. I look at it this way. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed to have you guys include me. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. You're awesome as well.
Yeah.
I think I didn't have an internet connection until about 2005 or so. Because when I lived in Queensland, we lived like very rural area. Both my parents grew up on farms. They didn't care about the internet. They didn't know what the internet was. We didn't have an internet connection. It wasn't until we moved out of that area to South Australia and started living in the suburbs where we actually got a connection. That was...
Was it high-speed internet or was it dial-up?
It wasn't dial-up, no. It was, I think we had, like, 2 down or something. So, you know, high-speed relative to dial-up, but, like, not that great. It was functional. Right. And Australia up until probably, like, the 2010s had pretty bad internet. Like, as a like residential connection, really the best you could get at the time was like 10 down or so. So it just, and that was if you were lucky. I think I had like 5 down until a couple of years ago.
Like, really?
Yeah, probably until like 2015, 2016, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, like the internet here has always been an absolute mess. But yeah, I think I got interested in computers around the same time as well, though, because that's when we got... Did we? No, I think we got our first home computer then, like when I got that connection, and right. But I had used a computer at like my friend's house. They had like, I think I was running like Windows 98 or something. This was well into the lifespan of XP, and then I had a cousin who was a software engineer. And I think he was a big part of the reason I got interested in what I'm doing now. I think he's still doing it now. But yeah, ever since that point, I've been interested in just like... At the time, I was using Windows, but I've been generally just interested in tech. And I've always sort of wanted to do something involved in tech, whether that was being a developer, sysadmin, what I'm doing now, just something in this space.
Oh, that's, you know... That's cool. What was your first? So you recently came into Linux within like 4 or 5 years, you said, right?
Yeah.
So what was your initial distribution that you first used?
Arch Linux. That was the first one.
You went straight to Arch.
That's the first one I daily drove. I had used because I was in a software engineering degree at the time. I had used Ubuntu and OpenSUSE in a VM because there was like some classes we had. One of the classes we were like learning how like basic Linux system management works, but like actually daily driving it would have been Arch Linux. Yes, Arch Linux and the i3 window manager, because I was copying Luke Smith at the time.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. So you went window manager right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you're still there in a window manager?
Now I'm on Hyperland, so Whaling Compositor, but yeah, still window manager. And
so how does OBS work on Hyperland for you?
Well, besides that crash we saw at the start. Besides that, so up until about 2 years ago, OBS did not work on Wayland. Like, you could run it, but it couldn't capture your desktop. It couldn't capture Wayland Windows. It was basically unusable. After that point, Georgios Stavrakis worked on some stuff. That's when all of the desktop portal stuff happened, where we had, like, the video capture portal. From that point, it's worked fine. Like, ever since that happened, it's just been good. Hyperland actually does some things better than Sway. Sway has this bug right now where you can't, like, window capture in OBS. You can only capture your desktop. It's been a bug for a while. There's, like, a... There's a workaround...
That's only Sway?
Yeah, Sway.
Yeah.
Hyperland uses a fork of the WLRoots portal and fixes that problem. So it just works.
Gotcha.
The only issue I've had is occasionally the portal's a bit flaky and sometimes it will crash and that might cause OBS to crash. Besides that, it's pretty much good.
Nice. Well, the reason why I was wondering is because our generation has had grown up with technology in their hand from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always, you know, that's why when I make my videos and I recommend things, I always try to realize who I'm, the audience, you know, like one of the things that performers tell you is read the room, know your audience. You know what I'm saying? Know what you're trying to do. And that's what I tried to do. And so that's why I asked that question, because I realized that in communication with lots of people through, you know, my Discord or through, you know, comments on my videos or, you know, just DMs from Facebook and Instagram and, you know, Twitter and all that stuff, that a lot of the people that I'm dealing with, they're jumping in to, like, window managers right off the bat and Arch Linux. They're not, you know, starting off with a desktop environment, you know, and going into that. So, I mean, it blows me away how much more advanced it seems like people that are coming to Linux are. And I think that's what's creating a large positive environment for it and growth. I think that's where a lot of the growth is coming from.
I think there's still a lot of people in that, like, in that spot where your boss was at, was just like, I want something that works. I don't understand computers. But there is definitely, because there are so many resources nowadays on how to, like, set up Arch and how to get everything working, it's a lot more approachable than it would have been. Like, we can all say, oh, just read the documentation, read the man page, all that stuff. And that's great if that's the kind of person you are. But that's not the way that most people work. Most people
are
wanna,
correct.
Yeah, most people want to have, like, you know, some sort of guide, some sort of, like, there's a reason why videos are so popular. Like, people can complain about videos all they want, but there's a reason why videos are a lot more popular medium than, like, text-based guides. They are so much easier to use. Yes, they might get a bit outdated, and yes, they are hard to update, but when they are, like, when they are actually in that span where they're useful, they are very useful.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really funny because before I became a YouTuber, I used to go to YouTube for that. I'd be like, how do I change this part on this card? What is it? Somebody's come up with a faster way of doing it. So I would just Google it and then I'd YouTube it, you know, and look it up, you know what I'm saying? And so you're absolutely right. I mean, videos are popular for a reason. And I think, like I said, with people making desktop, you know, managers, you know, customizing them, setting them up, installing and stuff like that, that it's become so easy, you know, that you can just do it in 10 minutes, you know? I mean, even Arch must have gotten a clue somewhere when they created their installer script.
Well, the fun thing about Arch and people complaining about Arch having the installer, Arch had the installer when it first came out. Like, Arch basically had a 2E installer like Debian had. They got rid of it at some point because it wasn't being maintained properly. But they had one at the start.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just funny how even they went back to that, you know, instead of doing the whole, you know, command line, doing it one thing at a time, you know? So, I mean, I think, you know, like I said,
obviously the command line install is always going to be like the... That's the way the hardcore users are always going to do it, because it just gives you more control. But as a simple install, like having it there, it does make it easier. It's the reason why, you know, the reason why people sort of shy away from Arch and just go with like Endeavor or Manjaro or Garuda, because, you know, you have the nicer installer.
Right. Well, yeah. And also, you know, it's really funny because you really, when you boil it down and you look at the Linux users,
mm-hmm.
you find that there's only two beasts that you're dealing with.
Okay.
You've got the full on, give me everything, full cup of tea guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the minimalist guy.
Mm.
Somewhere in between, you might find somebody that's in between, but they're actually more, they're not direct center. They're to one, they lean to one side more or other. And so that's why I think you always, I think there's more of the maximalist, you know, give me my desktop environment, give me this, that stuff, mm-hmm. all these apps already, you know, in here, this is what I want, because they don't want to take the time to set it up their own way. They just want to use it and go, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's where I like you were saying, you know, the vets in the more older guys that have already been wild with it, they tend to do their own building stuff. And that's why the TUIs are, you know, they don't need TUIs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the masochists who like building Gentoo.
Gentoo's not that difficult. It's just time consuming. It's about as difficult as installing Arch.
Huh?
Gentoo's about as difficult as installing Arch. It's just very time consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, in fact, I would surmise that Linux from scratch is even harder.
I don't know if I'd call Linux from scratch hard. Have you looked much into it?
I have looked into it, and I've tried it once or twice, but I didn't get very far with it.
Right.
And that's what I said. To me, it was a little bit harder because, they got the same kind of level of documentation.
Yeah, the reason I wouldn't say it's hard is because every command you need to run is, like, documented out. It's just a lot of commands and a lot of time.
That's what I mean. It seems like it's a lot more. Whereas, I guess if you build Gentoo the traditional way, then you're doing the same amount of commands.
Sure.
But if you do the one where you use like a disk, you know, to start it with, then that's a little bit shorter. I can't remember what it's called.
Stage 3 ISO, I think is what it's called. Stage four, whatever number it is.
Yeah. Stage 4.
No, wait. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Or you could go and suffer through it and just do everything from the start if you really wanted to, but don't.
Yeah, I'm saying if you want to do it from the beginning, the traditional way, it's like Linux from scratch. It's tons of commands, line by line by line. But if you do the cheating way and kind of do the stage 4, mm-hmm. so to speak, I don't want to call it cheating because nothing's cheating. Mm-hmm. In the end, man, if you win the game, you win the game. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And so to me, you know, if you do it that way, I think that's the more sane way of doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or you could do like some people just install Red Core or what's it called? The other one, you know, and just install what's already done as an ISO.
Mm-hmm. So nowadays, you started on Red Hat Linux. What are you actually using nowadays, your like daily driver?
My daily driver. So I'm on Arco Linux B.
Uh-huh.
I really am a fan of Eric Dubois' work, and I use his i3 window manager. I'm getting ready to what I was going to try. It was the Hyperland,
mm-hmm.
his Hyperland version, and I haven't tried it yet. But I really like his work. I like the completeness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, the dot config files, the dot files are pretty much what I put in mine mm-hmm. when I've done it in the past. So it's like I don't have to carry a library over. Mm-hmm. You know, of dot files, you know, right. It's pretty complete. When you look at his dot files, they're pretty complete. You know, he's added stuff in there. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? In mm-hmm. fact, I'd say he's added a lot of stuff, too much stuff. You know what I'm saying?
But,
I mean,
you were saying before about looking up videos to like just find things. Speaking of people that you can look up things and find things, Eric has way too many videos on things going on with Arco.
Oh, he's up to like, what, 4,000 videos or something like that?
I don't know.
I think he puts out a video a day. Yeah, he puts out a video a day.
No, he puts out like 6 videos a day. Some days.
Is it 6 videos a day?
Some days. So,
are you serious?
Let's see. Past 24 hours, we've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 6 videos.
Wow. Wow. That man just eats, breathes, and sleeps Arco.
Yeah. Linux. Yeah.
That's why it's so complete, I guess. It's so thorough.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, have you looked at some of his .dot files? Like,
I know I haven't.
Go look at his i3 config file.
You should be able to find, if I look up Arco Linux
or PSPWM file, any of them, man, look, they're all the same.
Arco Linux -i3, is this it? Ah, here it is. Okay, yep, cool. I found the GitHub.
Yeah.
Okay,
look at that thing.
Key definition is to remember. Okay.
You're scrolling for days. He's got stuff in there that you don't ever, nobody really uses, but it's still in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of stuff is just commented out if you want to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
There's different iterations of the same command, like your audio settings. Yeah. You know, you play CTL or debus send.
Yeah. Yeah, what? He covers every base in there.
Jesus.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it is single-handedly one of the largest config files I've ever looked at, ever. I was like, wow.
Well, if I need to recommend someone a default config, I might just send them to this from now on.
Absolutely. It's guaranteed to cover everything. He's got everything in there. Everything in there.
Does he fix
his bash RC files the same way? You should check out his bash RC file.
Oh god. Let's have a look. I don't even want to imagine what the bash RC is gonna look like.
He's got aliases for everything, man. You should check it out, man.
I think this is it. Wait, no, this is, oh, wait, no, this might be it. Okay, here we go. Yeah, okay. I just started scrolling. Yeah, okay. Wait, and he's got like 7 different iterations of the same alias for some of them.
Yep.
Key fix. Key dash fix. Keys fix. Fix key. Even, fix keys.
He even got misspelled. The most common misspelled aliases in there. Oh, misspelling for aliases. Like update with like without the P in it or something. It's like UDate or something like that.
Oh, he's also got at the bottom where it like runs NeoFetch. He's got like 12 different other tools you can use in place of NeoFetch.
All of them. Yeah.
I've like looked at a lot of this stuff. I've not even heard of some of these. What in the world is
Olsi? I'm telling you. That's what I was saying.
What? Okay. Sure. Sure.
That's what I'm saying. Seriously, that's one of the reasons why I like Arco, is because like he has everything that I would use in there. It's just easy, just uncommented. Mm. You know what I mean? And you're good to go.
I'm personally not a fan of having a bunch of aliases that I didn't make myself, just because I don't think you'll ever remember them.
I know. When I set mine up, I get rid of a lot of those. I, you know, I yank them out. You know what I'm saying? I yank them out and get rid of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just, to me, it's easier instead of typing it all, just yank it out. You know what I mean?
No, that's fair. So I get that.
When I saw his configs, I'm like, that's what I'm using. Mm-hmm. that's my template, and then I'm just customizing it to my own, you know?
So you said there was a Hyperland version as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I think he's got a Hyperland version as well. You're thinking, let me check this out.
Yeah, no, I want to see what he's done in here. Hyperland desktop. No, I want to see the actual config. I can't find it as easily this time. No, this is... No, that's the ISO itself. Hyperland config? Is that going to find it? My Hyperland... No, that's someone else's setup. There is a Hyperland ISO. I'm just not sure where the config is. It will be somewhere on the GitHub.
It's got to be somewhere, yeah.
I'll see if I can find it afterwards.
Yeah, just look, you know, go do a little deep dive on that later on. I mean, I'm telling you, the man is thorough at best, man. He's thorough. And, you know, it's so, like I said, you know, that's what my daily driver is, and that's why I use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to set up. I just cut out what I don't need and I'm good to go, because it's, other than that, it is what I've always done, you know?
Mm-hmm. So how did you get from Red Hat Linux to here? So where did you actually go after Red Hat Linux? Because that stopped in 2003 when Fedora came out.
I went to Fedora.
Okay, right. That makes sense.
I jumped to Fedora for a while. Then I played with Conical for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I went to PC Los for a while.
PC Los.
And Mandriva.
Okay. What's PC Los? Oh, PC Linux OS.
Yeah, PC Linux OS.
Ah, didn't I know anyone abbreviated to PC Los?
PC Linux OS. I used to call it PC Los, whatever. I did that for a while. Then I went to Mandriva. Mm-hmm. And then I did Debian for a while. Just regular standard Debian. That one I rocked for the longest.
Okay.
Because the packages were just phenomenal.
Right, you know what I mean?
The packages were just phenomenal. I rocked that one for the longest. And then when Arch came out, I didn't try it at first because, to be honest with you, I was working at? I was working at a computer shop.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of Windows work. Mm. And so I was doing a lot of Windows work and dealing with a lot of, you know, Microsoft Office and all that kind of crap. So I had to have Windows at home. So I started driving Windows for a while there, mm-hmm, for a period of about 2 years, 3 years. And then when I came back, then I dove into Arch.
Right, right.
And then I just been whatever. I could use whatever flavor comes along now. Sure. You know what I mean? So whatever, really what has been, when I get bored of a distro, whatever, you know, I've got loaded up onto a pen drive, I just use that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just use whatever I come across. You know what I'm saying? Fine. You know, it's different. It's new again. See what's new here. And then my whole world got turned upside down when Ventoy came along.
Mm.
And I could have like 12.
I've heard good things about Ventoy. I've not actually used it. People have asked me to do videos on it for God knows how long now.
Well, I did a video on it.
When did it come out?
Oh, it's been out. I don't remember when it came out.
Initial release 2020. Oh, it actually is fairly new. Huh.
Yeah.
It's
the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, give people just a brief explanation of Ventoy for anyone who hasn't heard about it.
So Ventoy is a application that you download. It's in the repositories, or it's in the AUR, and also in Pac-Man if you're on Arch, but you can download it. And what it does is it turns a USB drive, like you take a 60 gig USB drive, and it makes it into an actual bootable ISO drive where you can literally just drag and drop ISOs as many as you want that'll fill up that hard drive. Mm-hmm. And when you boot into it into your grub, you can pick the USB drive, and then it'll give you a GUI in there where you can select which ISO you want to boot into. Mm-hmm. So it's literally a distro hopper's dream. Or a computer repairman's dream. Mm. Or, you know, software guy's dream. Because you can put and it's not specific to Linux only. It's actually, you can put Windows on there, anything that's an ISO on there, an IMG. I think you can use image files too.
Hmm. I should get around to messing with Ventoy at some point.
It's straight up badass.
It does look really cool. Like, for me though, like it's not something that I would use in like my personal usage. I'm not much of a distro hopper. I use Arch, and Arch does what I need to do.
Yeah.
But I can see why, if you like, actually, when you do your distro reviews, do you do them on hardware or in a VM?
So I do them in hardware, and I do them in VM.
Okay.
It depends on, you know, like oftentimes I'll talk to some of the developers and they'll tell me, you know, I'd rather it be done on hardware or whatever. But if it's one of the common big ones, you know, that I'm doing, I'll do it usually in a VM.
Yeah. Ubuntu, Fedora, that stuff's gonna be fine.
Yeah, I do in a VM, because pretty much, so somebody's already thrown it on a box, they kind of know. Yeah, I'm just showing the highlights of what's changed. But when it's something that's an independent or something like that, what I'll do is I have a T40 Lenovo laptop that I'll throw it on. You know, and then what I'll do is I'll port that into my video capture card, mm-hmm, and then I'll capture it that way. And it's actually done on hardware.
Yep.
You know, I mean, to me, it's a fair way of doing it, you know, giving a good shake on hardware.
Mm-hmm. What are you using to get?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what are you using to get the video stream?
A Mirror Box capture card.
Oh, okay.
4K.
Mirror Box. I've not heard of that one.
Yeah.
Mirror Box capture. Oh!
This little bad boy. This little bad boy right here.
Yeah, I've not used. I have heard of this one. Yeah, I just
had a 4K capture card.
Huh. That's cool. Yep.
Yeah, it's got HDMI input and USB 3 input, and then it's got 4K out, man.
Hmm.
Pretty sweet little box. I think it cost me... Oops, I hit my mic. I think it cost me a whopping total of like $80, $90.
Yeah, that'd be a normal price. So, right now, it's if anyone wants one, it is 40% off, so you can get it for $50.
Oh, see? Look at that. You're already getting a deal.
Wow, this is an old ad. It shows Xbox 360 game capture.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's old. You know, if that's anything like Amazon that you were looking at.
Yeah, it was then, Amazon.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Probably old things. But yeah, no, it works flawlessly. I actually have two of them. Because sometimes a gamer tube will come over.
Right.
And we'll do live stuff or whatever. And then he'll come over and, like, he'll use one and I'll use another one. You know, for his... Yeah. To capture some of his screen content or his gameplay. Yeah, no, that's what I do to get actual on hardware.
Right.
Because I'm not going to lie to you, man. I am not trying. I do have a terabyte NVMe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not partitioning it. I'm not doing all that crap just because I also have my Steam library on here. Mm. I need that space. So now I'm not wiping and redoing
no, that's hard totally drive fair.
Every time. Screw that. I'm sorry. You know, not when I can get it to work that way and still give you a decent review.
Mm. No, that's totally fair. I just wasn't sure if you did it on hardware or not. Because I know DT has had issues in the past where distro maintainers have gotten bothered with him because he tested something and then it was an absolute mess in a virtual machine. It was like a horrible laggy mess and they were just like, it's not like this. This is not at all what this distro is. Like, just test on hardware and you'll see what it's actually like.
Well, and that's fair. And that's a fair point, you know, and that's why, like I said, a lot of your major ones will actually do that. You know, they'll work in a VMware, but that's why I tend to do the smaller independent ones, not that way, because a lot of them don't have that developmental time to be putting into, you know, creating the VMware side of it and stuff that. So.
Well, usually it should just work. It's just a matter of, when things go wrong, then someone's got to deal with it, and yeah.
And what's interesting too, which blows my mind away, is how. And maybe it's because I don't 100% understand all of the virtualization aspects of things, but how certain distros will work flawlessly in VirtualBox, but they will work. They will be totally piss poor. In Vert Manager or GNOME boxes, you know what I mean? And how the, like, they're very picky about which Vert Manager, you know, which virtualization you're using to run it in. It's wild how that works.
Yeah, my extended virtualization is like the major distros, so the Fedoras, the Ubuntus, the Gentoos of the world. So I've not really dealt with that. All of those work fine in VirtualBox. Like, I've not had a problem. But I could imagine they're is some oddities with the other ones, especially
that's what I'm saying. There is oddities because I do that, you know, and I do test things in a virtual machine as well. You know, I've found that to be something that's trippy. How, and that's why even DT, some if you go back and look at some of Derek's older videos, if you go back and look at some of his older videos, you'll see where he's running VirtualBox on this one, and then he'll be running Vert Manager on this one.
Right.
And I wondered. I thought, oh, maybe he just did it differently. Whatever. It's probably because some of them won't work in there, and some will work. I mean, it's a trip how that is. You know, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. In the end, the best way to do it, if you can, is just do it on hardware. Because on if it's hardware, not going to run on hardware, then like the distro doesn't matter. Like that's a problem from the start.
Yeah, well, if I can't get it to go on hardware with the crap, then I don't even do the review.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just don't. You know what I mean? I just don't. You know, I can't tell you how many. I probably got about, right offhand, I could tell you at least 20 distros that were sent to me by users that when I threw it on hardware, it was not good at all. And I was like, yeah, I'm not even doing this review. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or it was literally, minus branding, a clone of something else.
Right, right.
You know, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that either. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. You know,
no,
I mean,
that's fair.
If you're gonna create your own distro, then at least have enough separation between your fork that you're forking from.
I will give one exception to that: Rocky Linux, because it's RHEL.
Yeah,
that's the one exception where you can be a clone and just remove the branding, and it's fine, because that's the whole purpose of, you know, having Rocky Linux.
Yes, yeah, you're right. You're correct in that 100%. I agree. But I mean, that's what I'm looking at. And you know what's another thing that blew my mind away is how, because I was in my own world, just doing my own thing, you know, concentrating on, you know, what videos I'm going to make, you know, like the PyCom one that I did. And, you know, I'd like to do a lot of hardware stuff too, you know, because I'm a hardware guy.
Right, right.
Some people are software guys, I'm a hardware guy. And so doing all these things, right? And so, like, I didn't realize, I knew there were a lot of different distributions of Linux. I didn't realize that there's like 600 or more.
Yeah. That's just the ones that are captured by DistroWatch, which are the ones that are maintained. I think the
greatest distribution ever made was a Hannah Montana one.
That's a pretty good one. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I'll just show it. Why not? Hannah Montana Linux. Okay, here we go. There we go. Hannah Montana Linux. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Or HML for short. I don't. Stop
yep.
it. Stop
it. Yeah.
What is it based on? It's using KDE 4.2. Debian. Oh, no. It's based on Kubuntu.
Ubuntu, yeah.
This is so stupid.
It's the greatest. It's awesome.
I love that their webpage has basically no styling to it. It's.
Yeah, no, it was created, I think, as a total joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't think it even has any maintenance done to it at all.
No, it's running, it's KDE 4.2, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, like I said, you know, I was blown away with how many actual distributions are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they're growing more and more, like the kid that brought back Unity. Can't think of his name.
Rudra, is that his name?
I think. Anyhow, he's actually working on a whole nother one as well. And it's just awesome.
Have you looked at his Twitter bio? Because he like lists out all of the projects he works on. I'll see if I can find it. Is that it? Is that his account? Or is that someone else with the same name? No, okay, this is it. Official Ubuntu member. Fair enough, okay. Project lead of Ubuntu Unity, Ubuntu Web, Blend OS, Unity X, Game on Ubuntu, Una, Modron, Ubuntu Education, Ubuntu Remixes, LOL, and Skull Systems. Yeah,
does
he's
this
also
kid
the,
have no life?
He's the Blend OS developer, in case you didn't realize that as well. But
I didn't know that.
He doesn't have a life. I don't know.
Wow. That's the go-getter right there.
Yeah, this is someone who's going to be like, when they're like, you know, in their 20s or 30s, is going to be one of these people that everybody knows in the Linux space.
Absolutely. And he'll have such a body of work underneath of him that it's just going to be impressive. He's almost like the Linus Torvalds of distros. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's like.
I know what you're saying. Like, this guy has got like a lot of stuff he's working on.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and when he started doing it, it was like 10 years old, 12 years old.
Something like that.
It's crazy. It's just, and to me, you know, I'm 53 years old and, you know, I'm still amazed that I can still edit a config file anymore. You know what I'm saying?
When I was 10 years old, I was riding a BMX bike and crashing into trees. Yeah, that's about right.
I think that's what, in my generation, we did the same thing, and we were playing G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe, plastic G.I. Joes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first computer my first computer, it was funny. I was thinking about that when you were talking about your internet, your home internet, getting your first computer and stuff. My first computer was at Coleco, or Atom by ColecoVision. But my first actual, you know, desktop computer with a monitor and everything else. Because even those computers, like the Commodore 64, you hooked them up to your TV.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But the one that came with an actual monitor was a Intel, I think it was Intel, and it was a 386.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And then I upgraded to a 486, and then I got the 486DX2.
And then all your games broke because they were tied to the CPU frequency.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it was slow at best. Mm-hmm. I think I might have had 128 megabytes of RAM. And maybe 200 megabytes for a hard drive space. And I ran Windows 3.1, and then I upgraded to 3.11 for workgroups, which was 13 freaking floppy drives to install that thing with. An install of Windows back then literally took half a day.
I never actually experienced installing Windows until Windows 8, I think. Because up until then, the family computers, like, we just bought new computers. Like, my parents didn't know that you could upgrade Windows. Like, that wasn't a thing.
It just came loaded. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah, it wasn't until I bought my own PC and had Windows 7 on it, then I upgraded to... No, I would have installed 7 then. Yeah, I would have installed 7 and then upgraded to 8. Yeah.
Ironically, that's the only version of Windows I ever liked was 7.
So there is a not small, not an insignificant number of people that are still using Windows 7.
And they refuse to let it go.
Yeah, so if you... I'll see if I can find this. So... Steam announced a while back that they were going to finally drop Windows 7 support. And there is a lot of people who were like...
They backlashed on it.
Real anger. It's like 1% of the community. Because there's like 1% of people still use it, which is crazy. But like there are a lot of people that were really angry about this. Like, how dare you break Windows 7 support. I bought these games. My computer only supports Windows 7. It's like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like, you know, it's really funny you mentioned that because we're talking technology. And the one thing that technology does to people is people either love to change and upgrade their technology or they just ride it out to the bitter end. And most people tend to be the ride it out to the bitter end. I mean, there are people out there, the people that are doing the Windows 7 thing, actually their first round was Windows XP. They did the same thing with Windows XP.
There are people in the comments being like, hey, we did this on Windows XP. There were people that managed to like skip the AOL date and like do some stuff to Steam to make it still run.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with changing your hardware clock. What they'll do is they'll change their hardware clock back.
Yeah.
You know, for like, I don't know how many decades back, but they'll change it to back. And then what they'll do is they'll set their internet connection to not update the time to the operating system. So that way it'll still think it's still live. You know what I'm saying? But they did that with Windows XP. It's the same way. You know, they just wanted to keep it around for it. They love their XP, and they're just not going to change it. You know?
I get liking it, but there comes a point where, like, something goes AOL. And once it's gone AOL, you should not be running it. Like, really.
Well, the security risks are tremendous.
It's one thing if we're talking, like, an air gap system, things like that. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, your daily driver, where you're doing your banking and you're doing all of this, like, all of this stuff, you should not...
You're connected to the internet?
Yeah. You should not be using something AOL.
No.
I remember a couple of years back, there was this blog post that came out from Linux Mint, where, I think it was 2021, there was, I think, 30% of their user base that was using a version of Mint that was 2 years AOL.
Are you kidding me?
Their numbers were a bit, you know, because you don't have like crazy analytics on Linux. The numbers were a bit flaky, but like, yeah, the numbers were like anywhere from 10 to 30% using 2-year EOL version of Mint. And it makes sense with Mint because Mint is one of those distros that will get installed on people's computers that don't know about Linux.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beginner. That's synonymous with Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's usually Ubuntu Mint that everybody wants.
Yeah, because Mint is like, it looks like Windows.
Yeah, like Windows XP.
Or Cinnamon, I guess.
Or Windows 7, actually. Yeah, 7 now, but used to be XP.
Mm-hmm.
But at any instance, yeah. And so they just don't want to update, and they're so happy to not be forced to update.
Mm-hmm.
So they just keep riding it out, and that makes sense. I get that. You know, but still, that's, you know, you would think that they would have a way of actually notifying them through, like, a package, you know, like, no more updates, no more anything, and your stuff gets so antiquated it doesn't actually work with stuff.
I think
that
back then a lot of that stuff wasn't really taken seriously. Nowadays, more distros are having things like that, mentioning, like, this is out of date, this needs to be fixed, things like that. But this was still back when a lot of people were very afraid of automatic updates and things like that.
Yeah.
With the rise of, like, image-based distros like Silverblue and things like that, it's gotten less taboo to have a distro that just automatically updates nowadays.
Yeah. Yes, this is true. And you know what's funny is to this day, sometimes I still struggle with seeing that you have these updates ready, you know, that, you know, you get that your Pac-Man, like, or like PAMAC will give you that little red thing, and it's like, you got updates ready. And I still find myself sometimes trying to gravitate to go to click that and check on them, you know what I mean?
So I don't have any icon there. I forgot to upgrade my... I don't know, last time I updated my system, probably like a week or two ago. I should probably do that. Yeah. Especially right now. Yeah.
Bro.
Yes.
Bro.
Yes.
Dude. I love your top grade freaking video.
Oh, yeah. Top grade's a really cool project. I think they had like the...
Oh, yeah.
Top grade died, and then there's like a Rust fork of it or something that people are maintaining.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is.
Is that the one that's in the AUR?
It's the one that Zero Linux uses, whatever version that is.
Yeah, I think that's the one that's in the AUR.
Hmm. Yeah, top grade but, RS, yeah.
Yep. Anyhow, I'm going to tell you right now, man, that thing was freaking phenomenal. That video, I mean, I was like, I saw that and I'm like, one package manager, and it, what? And I watched your video.
Is that what a title?
I
was like, that sounds like a title.
I can't remember the title.
No, that sounds like a title I would use.
I can't remember the name of the title, but anyhow, I was like, what? And I watched the video and I'm like, where has this been all my life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this is fantastic. This is totally, totally amazing. It kind of reminds me of, if they could colorize it a little bit better or something like that, make it look like kind of like Nala, because Nala is kind of the same way for the app package manager. But I mean, it was amazing. I was like, and I love how it separates that, like the Pac-Man, like in my instance, you know, Pac-Man, and then it does AUR, and then flat packs, and you know, at the end, how it, you know, categorizes it and separates it all out, so you can see exactly what you did. Dude, that's so cool. That was so cool.
Yeah, I like finding these really cool projects out there. Like, nowadays I do a lot less videos on software projects. Early days I did, like, I would pick anything. I would do a video on anything. Nowadays I like to focus more on things that are interesting, that are trying to do something different. And Top Grade was absolutely one of those projects. How long ago did I do a video on Top Grade?
I don't know.
Brody,
I actually found it on Steve's page because I just did the... Did one of his reviews.
A year ago. Wow. That was a while ago.
Was it a year ago?
I thought it was longer.
Yeah, no, I just found that video. You know, I mean, you pop up in my feed every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I always check out your videos because I love your content. You know, I mean, I really do. And so like I watch your content, you know, and when you pop up, and that was one that popped up, and I was like, oh my god! And then I saw it on Steve's thing. And you did it, you know, on Steve's. He's got it in his. I don't know if it was the XFCE one or one of those. One of those. He's got it in. So when you go to zerolinux.xz and go to his forums, and you go to the spins, it's in the spin, each spin, like the GNOME G spin or X0G and 0xFCE, it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I saw it, but I was like, that is so cool. That is a very cool little tool.
It's definitely like, doesn't like GNOME Software Center do that like partially with, like Flatpak and apt or something? I don't actually use something GNOME.
I think it does.
It doesn't do it everything.
But it doesn't do everything like TopGrade. I think TopGrade is the only one that does everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. You know, I mean, it's very thorough, and it's nice because I even just aliased it.
Mm.
I just did an alias. So when I do what is my, oh, it's top up for top update.
Yeah.
You know, top grade update, top up. I just type in top up and boom, it just does it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I've not used it in a while. But yeah, I'm happy it's still going well. A lot of the projects I will do like videos on things. Even though I've done videos on all these projects, I don't necessarily keep using them. But I'll definitely like check back on them every so often to see how they're going, especially the ones that are actually still going. Because there's a lot mm-hmm. of things I've done videos on where they'll like, you know, it's, hey, I made something cool, and then it just dies like a couple of weeks later, and it's just, it goes archived.
Right.
But when that something
happens with everything.
But when something does actually have a user base and it is filling a need that people have, like, that's cool. I'm happy that people are getting something out of something that they didn't know about before.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's your Where Are They Now series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Solace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
oh, yes, Solace.
That's a great series. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, it's really, like I said, you know, that's the part that also I love a lot about Linux, too, mm-hmm. that you don't get in Windows
mm-hmm.
or Mac because of the nature of it being open source. You have so many people working on so many different things that Linux, as an actual ecosystem, is growing so much mm-hmm. in every different direction. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. Like,
you just don't get that kind of community anywhere else.
The only issue you have is you will see areas that are then underserved. Like,
correct.
From my understanding, I audio stuff is still a bit behind where it should be on the Windows side. Like audio production stuff is still behind where Windows is. But it also means you can get, like, there is some level of, like, open Windows development done on the Windows side that is all open. Right. But it's not the focus. Like, most of the Windows software you see is proprietary software. But that's, there is some on the Linux side as well, but most people just don't accept that as, like, a reasonable way to design software. So,
right.
You get a lot more openness. The only downside with that is a lot of people find it hard to monetize something when you have it so open, which means a lot of developers just can't put in the money, can't put in the time they otherwise would if they were able to afford doing this on more like a more part-time or even full-time basis.
Yeah. And that's why we lose so many great developers to Windows, because they have the money bags.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, here, you know, why not get paid for what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why you'll see in a lot of my videos, you know, and this goes for you. Mm-hmm. This goes for me. This goes for anybody who's doing anything to help promote or build up the Linux community. In fact, on one of my videos just recently, I had a guy say, why are you begging for money? Well, it's because all this stuff takes money. You know, and that's historically been a problem for Linux.
Mm-hmm.
You've got so many people putting out this free product out there, and everybody's like, oh, it's free. Like they deserve it. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I'm not saying they don't deserve it, and I'm not trying to come off pretentious, but I'm just trying to come out to the point that you take time out of your day to mm-hmm. make these videos, to bring knowledgeable content to people, to make their Linux experience better.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it wrong to get paid for that? Some people see it that way, and I don't understand why. You know, and when you ask for it, you say, hey, could you please help support the channel? It's not you're begging, but, you know, like I explained to the guy in a message, I said, you know, my video camera alone was $400. Okay. The LED lights that I run, what, 80, 90 bucks, whatever. The video capture card was 80, 90 bucks. Let's talk about the $4,000 PC I use. Okay. What about the $400 monitor I have? Mm-hmm. You know, all that costs money, you know, that I use to make these videos, to do these things, you know? And so why people have a hard time with that, I don't know. And I think developers need to get paid. That's why, you know, I've had a couple developers ask me about putting stuff behind kind of a paywall. Mm. And I'm like, do it.
I think the only issue with the paywall is that is going to scare a lot of people away. I think, donations are the best thing for the user. It's just a matter of how do you get people to use your software while also still getting paid.
Let me clarify the paywall, what I meant by paywall.
Sure.
Okay, so by the paywall, if you want, like, the perfect example of that is how Zero Linux is doing it.
Uh-huh.
What he's doing is, if you want the already built ISO, just donate. He doesn't have a set price. Just donate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At least I don't think he has a set price. He may, I don't know. But anyhow, just donate, right? But if you want to build it for yourself, then you can build it for yourself. Sure. And here is how to do it. You can go right to the page. You can download what you need to it and run the script. He gives you the commands to put in the command line to build it, the ISO yourself. And it's free. That's what I mean. Offer the free way of getting it. But put, you know, like the what most people were going to, you know, want to do in a way to be able to get some money from it. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see anything wrong with it. It's just a matter of how the reaction you're going to get, and whether you can actually get people to use a project like that if that's how you start it. It's one thing if you change to that model later on once you've already got some sort of base around you.
Yeah, no, of course you want to. No. It's like a new. It's a perfect example is cars.
Right.
Okay. When a new model of car comes out, or a new brand of car with a new model of car, when they come out, those cars are in the $15,000 budget range, right? They're new. They're introductory, you know, level, right? For people to get introduced to the company. So they put them out there in a way that, you know, you can get the base model and drive it around in a very affordable range to get you to like the thing.
Sure.
Then what they do is they start building the coupes and the sports car, you know, models, you know, and the SUV models or whatever, you know what I'm saying? The branding comes later. And that's exactly what you do with your projects that you're doing that stuff
for. That's fair. No, I get what you're saying.
Approach that same model. You know, approach that same model. Start off giving your stuff out, you know, in the beginning for free. But if you feel like putting it behind a paywall, you shouldn't feel guilty about it. Is what I'm saying.
No, I do get that. That makes sense. I definitely noticed a lot of people in the FOSS world. You know, we all talk about, you know, free software doesn't mean free as in beer. It means free as in freedom. But there is a lot of people that do sort of act like it does mean free as in beer as well.
It does. And they do.
Yeah, you see this if you go to any issue tracker. There's going to be a lot of people in there that feel very entitled about a issue not being dealt with in a timely manner. Like, you'll be like, why is this not done? Who is working on this? Can I get an update on this? Like, no, go away. Work on it yourself. I get why developers say that. But I think a lot of developers are really bad at communicating, like, why something is the case. People that are angry are not going to just accept, go work on it yourself. I do wish a lot of developers sort of gave a better explanation on why something is the case, rather than just trying to send someone away. I know that a lot of devs are very busy, but it would deal with a lot of the concerns that people have if they were just better at explaining what's going on.
It would definitely mitigate a lot of that anger and that misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like DT said, I was talking to DT one time, and he told me, he said, if you come to Linux to do any like Linux content, software, whatever, he says, to make money, he says, you came to the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, pretty
much. You came to the wrong place. You go do Windows videos because people there are used to paying. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just really fun. It's just funny when he said that. It's like, yeah, no kidding, because it's true. You know, they look at it as, like you said, free beer, mm-hmm. and it's it. I don't know why it's gotten to that expectation, but it has. And I think that we should all definitely work to promote, especially for the devs, because I mean, a lot of these people, like, I know a dev, like, one lives right here by me, actually. And this dev is taking time away from his family to maintain things. This two-person OS that he maintains, you know what I'm saying? Just him and one other cat. And hours and hours and hours and hours on this stuff. You know, he's away from his family. You know, I mean, it's if you were doing that for your job, you know, and people were enjoying it, you know, you would be asking the same question. Why can't I get a little compensation?
Yeah, no,
you know
I get that. Absolutely makes sense. Yeah.
You know.
No, I fully agree. I'm sure there's gonna be someone that disagrees in the comment section, but
I can't wait. I cannot wait to hear the comments on that. They're gonna blow us up.
But speaking of distros, did you see that Ubuntu Cinnamon is now like a thing that's actually like official?
Yep, an official flavor, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's happened is, this is just me spitballing.
Mm.
A corporation is a conglomerate.
Right.
It requires your product. When you think about it in a marketing aspect, right? Mm-hmm. Because it goes off of marketing. Obviously, it's on the business side because it's Ubuntu and it's like huge in the server business, right? But part of the thing is marketability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And marketability is dependent and tantamount on acceptability.
Right.
Right? That being said, when they tried to do their thing with forcing all their subsets to use snaps, that created a huge distaste in people's mouth for Ubuntu, and marketability and acceptability started to falter. So right. The only way they could do now is to start grabbing all these other and retract the whole SnapD thing like they did, and now start grabbing and making all these other flavors to try to put more.
Well, cinnamon already existed as cinnamon already existed as like an unofficial flavor.
It's an unofficial flavor, but I'm saying to make it official now. Right, is what right. They're trying to, in a way, they're trying to, it's kind of like a rebranding without rebranding.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Right. No, I get what you're saying.
And I think that's kind of what they're doing. And also, it could also be because cinnamon and like the Unity, the cinnamon, mint, also mint moving more so to Debian than Ubuntu. I think it's kind of, I mean, they're still doing their Ubuntu flavor, but it's kind of like showing a shift in people's use of Ubuntu. You know, they're not usually the official. So why not buy the, or adopt the official and make, or unofficial and make it official so that they keep their numbers up. You know what I mean? And the marketability size. Cause when you're looking at that, you're looking in a corporate world, right. You're looking at bottom lines. Downloads and usability count toward bottom line. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense.
And so if you got Mint that's outperforming the Debian Mint that's outperforming this, you're going to want to grab another one that's performing like Cinnamon and pick that up, because you know they were an unofficial, make that all counts more for you in a corporate, you know, spreadsheet world. Nothing changed other than the officialness of it.
Right. Huh.
I think, like I said, that's just spitball.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. For anyone just listening, like, that's like, not 100% certain that's what happened, but, like, yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that, definitely. Because there is a lot of people that aren't really happy with the direction that Ubuntu is going with.
Exactly.
Especially snaps. Snaps is like the big one where it would be one thing if snaps were just, you know, their own separate thing. And you could use them if you wanted to. But the fact that they are starting to encroach on like existing packages, like you've got the Steam snap being worked on, which doesn't need to exist because there is the Steam Flatpak already. You've got the Firefox Snap, which doesn't need to exist. I know Mozilla like was working with them on that one, but like it doesn't need to exist. And you got, because like once again, there's an official Firefox Flatpak. I don't really know what they're doing there, besides just trying to gain control over it.
So to my understanding, it's diversification is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
In a corporate world, when you like acquiring the cinnamon and making it official, that's also more diversification, right?
Right.
And you're divesting yourself so that you can get more profitability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to my understanding about the Steam versus the Flatpak is, or Snap versus Flatpak, is the reason why they're trying to incorporate all of these flat packs into the Snap version is because Snap is made more for containerization for servers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think the structure, the structure, and I may be wrong in it, but I think to my understanding that that's what the difference is between Snap and flat packs is the integratability into the server, Ubuntu mm-hmm. server. They're basing everything on their snaps to be able to plug and play and work into the Ubuntu server flawlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And they can only guarantee that with snaps. And that's why they're doing that.
Hmm.
So I wonder if they're trying to make an operating system that's just basically Ubuntu server and you just put all your snaps that you want in there to make it your OS. Your desktop OS.
I could see that.
Like a modular OS. Mm-hmm. Desktop.
I could definitely see that. It would definitely make it easier on like the backend side, because you would just have the one thing that you deploy, and then it's basically just like a configuration script. You just like change what's pre-installed.
Yep.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Hmm.
No, interest, huh?
I see where you're coming from. That definitely makes sense.
Yeah.
Right now, it's still very far away from that. Like, there's still a lot of the system that's still absolutely apt.
No, it's definitely what I'm. That is, I think, possibly the end goal.
That's
what everything seems to be lining up to present to a degree.
Mm. Mm, mm.
And like I said, the flavors that you're talking about, them adopting all the flavors as official, that's the diversification, because they're going to stick to that one base model, and then they'll have all these other ones to compensate for what other users may want for marketability and acceptability on a corporational, on a corporate level.
Is there even anything left that they haven't adopted as like an official Ubuntu flavor that anyone would even want anymore? What do they even have at this point? Let's see. Okay, so
I don't really follow Canonical that much, except for like the brief highlight, you know, the headlines that come up now and then. And that's just kind of, like I said, just me as a former business owner, you know, looking at things, you know, on because as like I said, they're a business. They're mm-hmm. they're the Microsoft, so to speak, of the Linux world, right? Mm-hmm. Even though they're a much nicer Microsoft, you know what I mean? But at any instance, that's what I equate them to be.
Right.
And for me, that's what it's how can they keep their profitability going?
Right.
And the way that technology is changing, the way that immutable systems are starting to become a thing,
mm-hmm.
why not go containerized?
Mm. I know that with Fedora 39, apparently the Fedora images are becoming like an official thing. That's what I think George Castro, the Ublu guy, was telling me when I had him on.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a big change for Fedora. But I'm looking at the Ubuntu flavors right now. We have KDE, LXQT, Budgie, Cinnamon, Mate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cutting out the ones that aren't like their own separate desktops, like Studio and things like that. Unity, XFCE.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any other like DEs that you... Obviously, there are other like Windows things, but like DEs, I can't think of one. When Cosmic comes out for PopOS, maybe that would be hilarious if the one selling one of Cosmic becomes like a part of Ubuntu.
That would be awesome. But yeah, I think that's really what it is. They're trying to diversify and stay relevant, you know, because that's their goal. It's an interesting, like I said, I've thought about it.
It's definitely an interesting angle.
It's a different, yeah, it's different. It's different than what you hear. I mean, it would make sense that they're trying to do that, to do it that way. I mean, I don't know what Mark Shuttleberg would answer that as, but, you know.
Circle of friends. Circle of friends is the answer. We're trying to bring everyone together.
They're all friends. They're all our family.
Yeah.
We're trying to bring them into the fold.
If a company starts calling you family run, like,
Pretty much.
They're not your family. They are not your family.
No, they're not your family. You have made them enough profit that they want to capitalize on that. So, yeah, no, I watched the change, and like I said, and I know I kind of put them with the M word, you know, but it's honest. It's honest M-word. As day is long.
That the M word, lovely. Yeah. did you mention what desktop you were using before? Because I know you mentioned using your Arco.
i3.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh.
How is i3 for you? What's that experience like? I haven't used it in a long time, besides Sway, obviously.
I gotta tell you something about i3, man.
Uh huh.
i3. With the auto tiling function,
yep,
to me is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Honest to God, I've tried Xmonad, I've tried all of them, I've tried BSPWM, I've tried all of them, and Qtile and all of them. I've even tried freaking Maybox. You know what I'm saying? A floating window manager, man. And the only one that I feel works the best for me, that suits my workflow, and I can customize it to the days long as the day is long, and it just, I enjoy it, is what everybody terms as the beginner's window manager, which is i3.
I really wish i3 was not a manual tiler. Like, the auto tiling script is so useful.
Oh, absolutely.
When I first used i3, I was like, hey, this is great. Tilers, this is cool. This is so better than Windows. But then when I tried a dynamic tiler, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Why is this so much better? But i3 is just so easy to configure. Like, that's the great thing about i3.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing that I hated about it in the beginning, and I suffered through it. But then it was like somewhere a ray of sunshine came down, lit up my whole area. I heard, oh, and then there was this thing called auto tiling script that appeared on my screen. Yep. And I was like, what is this? And I was like, well, what's the worst thing I could do? Try it, right? If I don't like it, I just don't use it, uninstall it, remove it, right? And I tried it, and I never looked back. It's been, I'm telling you, that to me is a single biggest blessing in i3.
For anyone who hasn't used it, basically it takes the manual tiler in i3 and then makes it not bad. It makes it an auto tiler. It just makes it dynamically tiling. No more you have to set the direction, which is so annoying. It's so inconvenient. I get it why people like it, but like, I'm not one of those people. I just want it to go where it thinks is the best spot to put it, and then leave it at that.
Leave it at that, exactly. And if you want to move it, you just do your key binding and boom, move it wherever you want. I love it. Resize it, whatever.
Yep,
it's awesome. What's your desktop or your window manager you're riding?
I'm on Hyperland right now, so
on Hyperland. Oh,
dynamic tiler. Dynamic tiler. Very similar to
before Hyperland. What did you use
before Hyperland? I was on Awesome WM.
Awesome WM. Yeah.
The nice thing about Hyperland,
I tried that one for a minute. I tried that one for a minute, and I can't remember what it was I didn't like about it. I don't know if it was the key bindings.
Lua configuration.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. One of the key bindings, that it had to do with the key bindings. I was trying to figure out how to change it, and it was Lua, and I was like, oh, this is crap. Not for me. Bye.
Lua is a little bit rough if you've never used Lua before. If I was going to use another window manager, or I configure it with code, I'd probably go with Qtile just because I'm more comfortable with Python. But I like Hyperland. Hyperland's good. The nice thing about Hyperland is a couple of months back they added a plugin system, and this plugin system allows you to do things like there's a plugin to use the River layout managers. The one of the strong things about River is it has a lot of custom layouts, and you can just bring those into Hyperland.
No kidding.
As the plugins grow, I could imagine people doing things like, you know, re-implementing the compiz animations and things like that. As it stands, though, there's not many plugins that exist, but the ones that do exist are pretty cool. Like, most of the plugins are for layouts. There's one that changes the way that workspaces work. So on Hyperland, you have, you know, on a window manager, you have, like, you know, workspace 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So
right.
On Hyperland, those are shared. And what I mean is, if I use, like, say 1, 2, and 3, that 1, 2, and 3 is only going to be on, like, one of my monitors. If I want to have 4, 5, that has to be, like, I can't have that in two places at once. So normally on, like, on Awesome, I think on i3 as well, you can have, like, 1 to 9 on each monitor. And they're, like, their own separate thing.
Right.
Hyperland, you can't have that. This plugin makes it work more like it does on Awesome.
Oh, no kidding.
I get why people like the workflow as it is on Hyperland, but I prefer the other method.
Yeah, it sounds more productive to me.
The other method is good. Like, the way Hyperland does it is good if you remember what workspaces are on what monitor, because then you can easily, like, move it back and forth. But I have
I do in i3s. I assign them to different monitors. Different workspaces.
I have a keybind that can just move my monitors between screens, though. So for me, it doesn't really matter either way.
Yeah, I do that too. I use the keybinding too. Like I did, like, my right monitor, I have to run my OBS on every time. And then my left monitor, which is right here, is designed to always run, like, Vert Manager or my browser or whatever, you know, is here. Even, like, my text editor's here. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm doing one where you do editing video, it's always over here. Right. So that way I just know that it's separate, you know, and I keep them separate that way. So I do that. But if sometimes I'll move my text editor when I'm not ready for it, I'll move it to the other monitor, you know, so it's out of the way, that kind of stuff. So that's what I do. I just flip between them. That's why window managers are the best. The flexibility that you have.
I've had some people suggest I go and try out KDE, because KDE has been doing some things a bit quicker than WL Roots. One of them, I think it was, they're doing some global hotkey stuff with, like, XDG portals that hasn't made it to other desktops yet. The only issue is the applications that would be using the global hotkey portal haven't supported the portal yet, so it doesn't really matter that.
Right.
But as it stands, I just like where I'm at on Hyperland. Like, it does everything I need it to do. It's really configurable. It's mostly stable. It's mostly stable nowadays.
It's only going to get better.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Unless Vax reintroduces a regression where GTK Windows caused the entire desktop to crash, which did happen a little while ago. But then he fixed it because he just forgot to merge the fix for it.
Right. Before, I guess if I were to go back to use a desktop environment, it would have to be KDE.
Right.
Only because of all the effects and stuff that you could set up and also, like, tile it. You can make it tiling.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what PopOS is doing with Cosmic.
I'm very curious about that too. I'm really curious about that. Like, I know in Zero G, he's got the PopOS shell in where you can actually, you know, turn on the tiling and stuff like that, which is really, really nice. You know, I always thought, and that's the one thing about, I mean, I'll be honest with you, the Cosmic desktop that they have right now is cartoonish to me.
Right.
I get the cartoonish feel, right? I don't know why, but I do. And so, but the one thing that I really, really like about PopOS is that tiling feature. I never use it for gaming, even though, like actually the GamerTube was using it for gaming for a while. And I've turned them on to that. Why don't you give that a try, you know? and he loved it. He really, really loved it. But I just, I don't like the feel of Pop OS for me. It just doesn't do it for me, except for the tiling thing. So that's why I've never done much with Pop OS.
I don't think I've heard. I think I've heard him call it like cartoonish before. That's a new one for me. Huh.
It's just me. I just feel it's gimmicky, kind of cartoonish.
Right. Do you mean like the theming or?
Yeah, the theming. I'm talking about the theming, yeah.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Yeah.
I guess I could see that. Hmm.
You know, like their Pop logo.
Yeah, I
can find it in a carnival.
No, I get what you're saying. So I'm guessing how do you tend to theme your desktop? Is it like fairly minimal? Is it like, do you like the brown of Grovebox? Like what do you like to do there?
No, I like vibrant colors. I'm Latino. I'm Cuban. You know, so we like vibrant colors, you know. So I like, you know, but it's really weird because I like it. I don't like it all over my desktop. Like I'm not into like the KDE neon shit.
Uh-huh.
You know, the KDE neon wallpapers and those kind of, man, I like dark themes, but like my desktop right now, if you look at it, I've got this Reaper and I showed it in one of my videos, my last videos that I did, the PyCon video actually. It's got a Reaper that's like a neon Reaper. It's got like blue and yellow and red and, you know, all that good stuff.
Let's see if we can find it. Is this it?
Or sorry, gray. It's got blue smoke with
I found it. Yeah, I found it. Okay. So you like dark colors with like bright accents.
Yes, exactly.
Right, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I tend to be the same. Like my theme is generally pretty dark, and then I'll have like some bright blue or whatever just to like have things pop out. So fairly like people would call this like material or whatever you want to call it nowadays. But like it's just
is that what they call it?
I don't know. It's like that's Google's terminology for it.
I call it mine. I call it my gig.
People call it like a flat theme or something like that. Yeah, it just looks good.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, what I do like is like if at the top on the, like my bar, I like the different colors, you know, like the rainbow type colors, you know, like the reds, the blues, the pinks, you know, that kind of stuff. I like that. You know?
Yep.
Just to add flair, a little flair.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, I can't stand bright white themes, man.
No, it's not my thing.
I can't. The only good thing that I will ever say about Windows is that they actually implemented a dark theme. In 10, was it 10 or it wasn't even an 8 that they had it. I think it was in 10. Windows 10 they made where you can go to dark theme.
Yeah.
They finally got around to making a dark theme.
And they've extended it in Windows 11 as well. That's one of the good things about 11. Yep.
One of the good things about 11. Yeah. And I mean that I will say. I mean I enjoy dark theme. I never could stand the bright themes. I hated it. Hated it back in the day.
I think Windows managed to do the light themes relatively well. I think the big thing is they didn't go with like, the problem with a lot of light themes is they use white. Whereas somehow Windows had like a slightly off-white, a gray, light colors that they're still light colors, but they weren't blindingly white.
Right. Not like ours.
No.
Holy crap. Ubuntu's, I remember the first time, man, dude, that was, I was like, holy crap, blaringly white. And then just recently, there was another distro I did that I looked at, and it was blindingly bright. Oh, Voyager. It was Voyager Linux. They're white, and it was blindingly white. But before I did the video, I actually changed it all to dark so I could do the video.
So we can find it. Voyager Linux. That page is already very bright. yeah, I see your problem. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, God. We're closing in on the 2-hour mark now, so...
Holy crap!
We should be...
You're awesome.
We should be...
Video?
Hey?
You got plenty of material for your video?
I've got plenty of it. Plenty of material. Nice. Usually what I do is I upload the full recording as like one thing, and then I like clip out things for like the extra clips afterwards.
Yeah. Whatever you want to do, whatever's clever, buddy.
Sweet.
I really enjoyed talking with you, man. Thank you for doing this with me.
I had a lot of fun as well. This was good. The 2 hours just flew on by.
Yeah, well, you know, God's gifted me with the gift of gab, man. I could talk about anything.
It's good when people want you to talk. When they don't want you to talk, well, you know, that's a bit more of a problem.
Difference is, I don't care. I still talk.
Yeah, that'll do it. Tell the people where they can find you, where they can see all your stuff.
I'm everywhere, man. I'm on Twitter, the Linux Tube at Twitter, Instagram, the Linux Tube, Facebook, the Linux Tube, YouTube, obviously, at the Linux Tube. I'm on Discord, the Linux Tube, and I am the Linux Tube on Mastodon. That's me. I branded everything all the same. So you just got to go to whatever social media and just search Linux Tube. You'll find the Linux Tube, and you'll find it.
You have good branding. Mine's a mess. I use my name. This is a problem.
Look for the penguin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's you know, I started to make that mistake in the beginning, and I just realized, you know, I just need to brand myself everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The same. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's a good idea. I'm far enough in now where it's like I can't really fix it. So
you just confuse the hell out of people.
Yeah, that's true. So you. It is what it is. It just stays how it is now. As for me,
on Gmail, thelinuxtube@gmail.com.
That's going to be in the transcript now. Good luck with all the spam you're going to get from that.
Are you serious?
I don't know. YouTube likes to, you know, auto annotate stuff. So
yeah, I know.
You're only going to get a bunch of bots now.
Oh boy.
Anything else you want to mention?
I guess if you don't know who I am, come check out my channel while you're there. Like and subscribe. Maybe even consider joining.
Sweet. As for me, the main channel is Brody Robertson. I do Linux videos there 6-ish days a week. Sometimes they're not Linux videos. Sometimes they're just general tech videos, but 6-ish days a week. The gaming channel is Brody on Games. Right now I am playing through Yakuza 0 and Devil May Cry 3. Probably Devil May Cry 3. I may have finished it by now, but Final Fantasy 16 is coming out soon. So when that happens, that is going to take over that channel. And if you're listening to the audio version of this, the video version can be found on Tech Over Tea on YouTube. If you are watching the video version, you can find the audio anywhere you find audio podcasts, the iTunes, Apple, whatever it's called. There's an RSS feed. Search Tech Over Tea on your favorite apps. You'll find it. Probably. Yeah. Any final words?
Guys, just... try it. If you don't know anything about Linux, try it. If you do know anything about Linux and you want to try something, still try it. Have fun with it. Mm-hmm. That's what it should be. It should be fun.
Absolutely. That's a good way to end
it. That's about it.
See ya.
Peace, guys.